start with a moment of silence, followed by the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance today. Newcomers, is there anyone in their first 30 days of sobriety who would like to welcome you? I think Jonathan, was that a wave in the camera?
Day of sobriety. And happy to be here. Thank you.
Great. How many days was that, Jonathan?
It was 17 days.
Fantastic. Welcome.
Thank you.
All right. Did we see anyone else with 30 days in their first 30 days? Okay. If you are new and you need numbers or help connecting, feel free to send a chat to one of the hosts and we will help you connect with others. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy. Neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the steps discussed tonight. So tonight, we will be discussing steps 5, 6, and 7. And let's see here. Those steps read, step 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. And 7, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. This evening, we have BJ and Mike as our panelists. Please take a moment to welcome them. Thank you both for being on. And we will start tonight on page 72 of the Big Book. I will read the paragraphs, and then our panelists will share for a few minutes each on the reading. Page 72. Having made our personal inventory, what shall we do about it? We have been trying to get a new attitude, a new relationship with our Creator, and to discover the obstacles in our path. We have admitted certain defects. We have ascertained in a rough way what the trouble is. We have put our fingers on the weak items in our personal inventory. Now these are about to be gassed out. This requires action on our part, which when completed will mean that we have admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our defects. This brings us to the 5th step in the program of recovery mentioned in the preceding chapter. This is perhaps difficult, especially discussing our defects with another person. We think we have done well enough in admitting these things for ourselves. There is doubt about that. In actual practice, we usually find a solitary self-appraisal insufficient. Many of us thought it necessary to go much further. We will be more reconciled to discussing ourselves with another person when we see good reasons why we should do so. The best reason first. If we skip this vital step, we may not overcome drinking. Time after time, newcomers have tried to keep to themselves certain facts about their lives, trying to avoid this humbling experience. They have turned to easier methods. Almost invariably, they got drunk. Having persevered with the rest of the program, they wondered why they fell. We think the reason is that they never completed their house cleaning. They took inventory, all right, but hung on to some of the worst items in stock. They only thought they had lost their egoism and fear. They only thought they had humbled themselves. But they had not learned enough of humility, fearlessness, and honesty, in the sense we find it necessary, until they told someone else all their life story. BJ?
Hi, my name is BJ. I'm an alcoholic. And my sobriety date is September 18th, 2019. I have a sponsor. I am a sponsor. And this right here is my home group. Thank you guys for having me speak tonight. I think this is the first time I've fixed my hair in like 2 months. I like came out of the bathroom and my husband was like, "Hey, stranger." But yeah, I'm glad to be here. It's always a privilege to share my experience, strength, and hope at a meeting of AA. And real quick, I'm an alcoholic because when I start drinking, I can't stop drinking. And when I stop drinking, I can't stay stopped. You know, if you invite me out to Sunday brunch before church and I decide to have a mimosa, it looks like I'm putting liquor in a travel mug to take into the sanctuary with me to church because I don't have the physical power to stop abruptly. And it looks like, you know, when I get out of hand and my husband tells me that he wants me to stop drinking, I can stop for 3 days. And at the end of 2 or 3 days, I'm coming out of my skin to the point that he and I both think that I need to drink. And the only formula I've ever found for staying sober, sane, and happy is by doing the things that I've learned in AA. AA has saved my life many times. And it's given me a life worth living. It's saved my marriage. Those are my husband's words, not mine. And it's made me employable. And life is good. And it's all thanks to this program. So, step five. I know I've heard a lot of people share that when they got to AA, they were kind of nervous about admitting everything they'd done wrong to another person. That was not me. I got to AA and the amend stuff scared me because I have really big pride issues, but I was ready. I was ready to spill my guts to somebody. As a matter of fact, about a year before I finally got to AA, I was drinking myself to death and I was suicidal. So for the first time in my life, I decided to go to a therapist. And I think deep down inside, I was just carrying some secrets that I needed to get out. And she lovingly suggested that I go to AA. And I think she knew, like it says in the big book, another alcoholic can help an alcoholic way more than a medical professional. And I think luckily I got a therapist who knew that. So she guided me to AA. And as a matter of fact, I did my first fifth step with my sponsor the first time we met for coffee because it was just something about this woman that I trusted her right off the bat. She was just kind of glowing and I could tell she didn't want anything in return. I don't know. I can't even articulate it. I trusted her. So we met for coffee one day. And as soon as we sat down, the way I remember it anyway, I just started talking and I immediately told her the one thing that I'd been carrying that was just like killing me. And I told her kind of my drinking story. She told me hers and she didn't make me feel bad about it. She basically said, "You can start walking in a different direction." And we did. So anyway, fast forwarding to the actual fifth step. Actually, you know what? I think that's all I have to share for now. So I'll pass to Mike.
Hey, everybody. I'm Mike. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is January 7th, 2008. I have a home group. It's 49th Street, Living Sober. We meet Thursdays at 5:30 and we're on Zoom, so please come join us. I have a sponsor and I sponsor guys. And like BJ, this is the first time in 2 months I've done my hair, so I'm looking pretty good. I'm excited about this. I'm a little nervous. I shared the other night at West Ghent. I still don't know where to look, and I don't know how loud to talk, but we're going to get there. When Jessica read the first part, I think that was the things that we did in step four to get to step five. And just reading it, listening to her read it, I got tired. I'm like, Jesus, okay, I did a lot of work there. And the next sentence says, this requires action on our part. My action was to put that list away for a minute because that took a lot of work. You know, I wrote down some stuff I didn't want to write down. Got mad at it, of course, because it was, you know, there were things on that list that weren't about me, that aren't going to be about me in the future coming up soon. And it just makes me angry and I don't want to do this anymore. So I'm going to put this away. Then I've been lucky in my journey. I've had two sponsors and we've read this big book line by line by line. And that gives me, I love the big book because it always gives you an out. I love it. I always find those outs too. One of the lines in here says, we think we've done it well enough in admitting these things to ourselves. Yes, that's good enough for me. It says it right there. And I took that to heart. I admitted it to myself. We're good for now. You know, nobody else is going to hear this. Three sentences later, if we skip this vital step, we may not overcome drinking. They don't let you mess around with it for long. You know, they bring you right back down to, you know, we gave you a little break. We gave you a little breather. Now you need to do this. You need to find that other person. You need to get out of yourself. You need to trust in your higher power, and you need to get this done. Then the bottom, it says, we've learned enough of humility, fearlessness, and honesty in the sense we find it necessary until we told someone else our life story. Well, I knew what those words meant. I knew the definition of humility and fearlessness and honesty. But once we do this, once we start this step, we're going to put those words right there. You know, I wrote those words in my four step, but they're just words, you know. Okay, I'm going to have to find some humility somewhere. I'm scared of everything. I'm not scared of anything. I've got to be honest. I'm not honest. How am I going to do this? I know what those words mean, but now I've got to sit, you know, straight across from another person. Am I really going to humble myself to that guy? Am I really going to tell him everything? Am I really fearless of this? Am I really going to tell him everything? You know, am I going to be? And the key, I think, is these steps are leading to 8 and 9. You know, I'm going to have to be super honest coming up. You know, am I going to have, do I have that in me right now to look another guy in the face or another girl, look my spot, whoever I choose right in the face? And am I going to be brutally honest? It's not an easy, like BJ said, she wanted to, I didn't want to do it. You know, like I said, I thought I'd done enough. You know, I said it, I wrote it, I got it, I read it. Good for me. And I'll get to later where, you know, I told God about it. You know, I thought that was enough. You made me. In step three, I turned my will over to a, you know, God of my understanding. Okay, I told him, we're good, right? That's enough. But it's not enough because I haven't done these things. I haven't become humble. I haven't become fearless. I haven't become honest. And as we go through this step, I will. Thanks.
Page 73, more than most people, the alcoholic leads a double life. He is very much the actor. To the outer world, he presents his stage character. This is the one he likes his fellows to see. He wants to enjoy a certain reputation, but knows in his heart he doesn't deserve it. The inconsistency is made worse by the things he does on his sprees. Coming to his senses, he is revolted at certain episodes he vaguely remembers. These memories are a nightmare. He trembles to think someone might have observed him. As fast as he can, he pushes these memories far inside himself. He hopes they will never see the light of day. He is under constant fear and tension. That makes for more drinking. BJ?
Yeah, just to jump back really quick, Mike made me think of something where it talks, well, just the step and definition, admitting to ourselves, another person and a higher power. I've always had a higher power. What I didn't realize is that the thing you worship is the thing that you're spending most of your time thinking about. So I really was worshiping alcohol for 12 years and not a higher power. But I've always been considered myself to be spiritual. And I thought that the fact that I was walking around with an immense amount of shame and guilt meant that I was admitting my faults to myself and a higher power. What I've learned by working step five is that when I put the stuff down on paper and say it out loud to another alcoholic, something magical happens where I'm kind of transformed. So, and really has nothing to do with shame and guilt. And also where it said, we put our finger on the weak items in our personal inventory. Thank God for sponsorship, because I did the fourth step of the columns exactly like it said in the big book at my sponsor's suggestion. She kind of showed me how. But when it came to going over my fifth step with her, you know, there was a lot on there that I thought that my self-esteem was being interfered with, or my security, when really it was pride. That's just an example. So she did kind of help me see the exact nature of my character defects. And she didn't tell me, she kind of showed me, and then I got to go through and see that for myself. So more than most people, the alcoholic leads a double life. Whoo! I am a chameleon extraordinaire. And if you think you're more of a chameleon than me, I will fight you on that. I just ever long before I ever took my first drink, and in hindsight, I think it's one of the things drinking relieved me of, I learned as a young child that I needed more than anything your approval and for you to like me. I can imagine, just like a wild animal is afraid of predators, I am afraid of you not liking me. It's that fear. And I learned when I was in middle school to become a people pleaser, and I learned how to fit in with every single kind of person. And that is really deep rooted, and some of that has been undone in sobriety by doing stuff like step five and making amends. But it's still there. And when I drank, I kind of became a more authentic version of myself, because I wasn't this doormat who was throwing myself at your feet so that you would love me. But it kind of went too far the other way, and all the rage and anger and resentment about you treating me the way I'm asking you to treat me, which is terribly, came out when I drank. So, you know, I would go from being, I'll tell you this story. This will kind of drive it home. So when I was in high school, I didn't really drink until later in high school, like maybe my senior year, I started drinking. And I was a good kid, man. Like, I'm an only child. I made good grades. I played sports. I went to church. I was kind of a goody two-shoes little kid. But I did. I got along with everybody. And I had friends, lots of friends. And I remember going off to college. Shortly after I got to college, I got a Facebook account. And, of course, you know, people take pictures of you while you're drinking, and, you know, the whole nine yards. And this guy that I had been in high school with messaged me, and he was actually a pretty soft-spoken dude, and I didn't even think we were that close. But he said, you know, BJ, I have to tell you, I always really respected you in high school. You're like the nicest girl. And I just really, you have a lot of character, but it really looks like you're going downhill. I just wanted to reach out and point that out to you. I hope you're doing okay. And, that it kind of hit me over the face, but I got really defensive. I'm like, you MFers expect me to be perfect. Guess what? I'm human too. But really, I mean, I'm a totally different person when I drink. And I think, like, weirdly, it has to do with my character defects when I'm sober. And the drink relieves me of those character defects until it stopped. Can you hear me?
Now I can.
All right. I don't know where I left off, but I was talking about lines to the bathroom. And, you know, when I was sober, I would let five different people cut me in line to the bathroom. And when I was drunk, if I thought one person was trying to cut me in line to the bathroom, I'd grab a handful of hair and pull them back, you know? So it really is that, is kind of that Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. And, yeah, when I sobered up, I did push those memories far inside myself. I trembled to think that someone might have observed me, because that's not how my mom and dad raised me. And I can blame it on the alcohol all I want, but when I'm drunk 90% of the time, that is who I am, you know? So yeah, fear and it's kind of cyclic, because I wake up, it's terrible. So I have to drink again. And when I'm drunk, I do stupid stuff. And then I wake up and then it's terrible because I have to deal with stupid stuff. So, I don't know. It's just, it really is like it for me, it was like being at the gates of hell, especially there near the end. So, yeah, that's all I have for now. Thanks.
Hi, Mike. What this first sentence, more than most people, the alcoholic leads a double life. That was me down to the core. I drank for 29 years. Most of you know, I taught kindergarten. That was my job. So all day, every day, I was with little people, 5 and 6 years old, telling them how great life was, singing, dance, play. I was a pillar in the community. I was respected by the parents, the other teachers, and I had it all. I mean, and it wasn't enough, you know, being normal was not good enough for me. I didn't know it, but it wasn't good enough for me. As soon as I got out of there, it was on. Dr. Jekyll, like BJ said, came out, man. I started drinking. And if I saw one of those parents out somewhere, oh, well, good luck. Here comes the other Mr. McGarity, because I don't know what this big thing is coming at me, because that's not the guy that teaches my kids. Look at this mess. And that was my stage character. And I'd go all night and I'd teach, you know, and it just, like BJ said, it was over and over. And I tried to stop and I couldn't stop. And, you know, it's made worse by my sprees, and it says revolted by episodes I vaguely remember. You know, my wife now, 12 years later, we call those our dark moments. She'll be telling a story and she'll see my face. And, you know, sometimes we laugh at some of the stupid crap I did, but there's parts where I just get blank and she's like, you don't even remember, do you? And I'm like, no, I mean, I still don't. You could have told me whatever you told me. I believe I probably did it, but I don't remember it. And those are all lies. You know, that's where it goes back to that honesty. I was never honest with anybody. Because if I was honest with everybody, I couldn't drink like I wanted to. I had to lie to get to that place where I could drink like I wanted to. I'll tell this story. My wife and I, we have a 16-year-old, and a couple months ago, he was sitting around, and he had done something wrong, and he was, you know, hemming and hawing, and we were talking to him about lying, and he goes, well, leaving out parts of the story isn't lying. And, you know, and I was kind of listening, and my wife was doing all the, you know, parenting. And then she looked at me, she goes, look at your dad, right? And I stood up all proud because she's going to say something good about me. She goes, that's the biggest liar I've ever known. So don't you think you're going to get away with that in front of him? And I'm like, all right, at least I can teach him something, you know, right on. All right. But, you know, even going to my fifth step, even in that moment, like my first fifth step, when I was still so unsure and probably not ready. You know, I took my first fifth step to my sponsor and I lied on it. I juiced it up a little bit. You know, this doesn't look as bad as this should look. I'm gonna put some other little, you know, I would write, you know, went to jail, but I would say, you know, went to jail for weeks at a time. I mean, it wasn't that bad, but I only spent the night in jail twice. You know, I didn't live there, but I had to make that sound better. You know, I wanted to be a badder drunk than that, so I had to. And, you know, when we pick this person, we've probably picked an alcoholic. We've probably picked a person who's got a lot more sobriety than we do. We've probably picked a person who's been through this before. And try lying to an alcoholic who knows better. You know, when I was saying those things to him, when I was telling the truth, it was smooth. Then I'd get to the lie. I'd start choking up. He'd look at me like I knew right away he knew I was lying. Why did I have to make this better or bad? it was bad enough. Just tell the truth. And going back to the reading before this, I know the definition of honesty. I didn't know how to practice honesty, even with a guy who was trying to save my life. He was just sitting there listening to this story. It didn't matter to him one way or the other what I'd done. And I had to juice it up. So, you know, I'm still in this part of the reading, and in the first time, and I will say this to newcomers, the first time I took this step, doesn't have to be, you can do this way more than once, because you're going to learn, you're going to make mistakes, you're going to learn what these words mean, and you're never going to do them perfect, you're never going to, and you know, that guy let me say those lies, he let me throw them right out there to him, and then we talked about them, and we moved on to the next thing, we were done with it. You know, it doesn't matter. Do the steps, do the action, do the work. Thanks.
Great, thank you. We will continue on page 75. When we decide who is to hear our story, we waste no time. We have a written inventory and we are prepared for a long talk. We explain to our partner what we are about to do and why we have to do it. He should realize that we are engaged upon a life and death errand. Most people approached in this way will be glad to help. They will be honored by our confidence. We pocket our pride and go to it, eliminating every twist of character, every dark cranny of the past. Once we have taken this step, withholding nothing, we are delighted. We can look the world in the eye. We can be alone at perfect peace and ease. Our fears fall from us. We begin to feel the nearness of our Creator. We may have had certain spiritual beliefs, but now we begin to have a spiritual experience. The feeling that the drink problem has disappeared will often come strongly. We feel we are on the broad highway, walking hand in hand with the spirit of the universe.
Ooh, there's some nice promises, and sorry, I'm a crier. I'm just glad I wasn't reading it. I chose my sponsor to fill stuff up with because it was easy and I trusted her. I have been told, you know, whoever you do your fifth step with, you need to be able to be 100% honest with them. And I share that with people I sponsor. I think it's really important. And you know, every once in a while, somebody will choose somebody who's not their sponsor. And according to the book, that's perfectly okay. It just needs to be somebody you're going to make sure you're not going to leave anything out. And it was a long talk. I think that cumulatively, it took like 5 or 6 hours to go over my first fourth step. it was very thorough, and it was long. But anyway, we pocket our pride and go to it, illuminating every twist of character, every dark cranny of the past. Twist of character really does tell the tale. because, you know, my character defects build upon themselves. And the example I'm thinking of right now, so, as I've already mentioned, one of my biggest character defects is pride. I'm like overly concerned of what you're thinking about me or what you think of me. And I know I'm not unique there. I think a lot of alcoholics kind of share that. But I had a pattern that emerged in my resentment inventory where pretty much everywhere I've ever worked, I've been resentful at my supervisors because I kind of had what I felt was a toxic relationship with my supervisors where, you know, they took advantage of me and they were unprofessional. And in doing the inventory, I got to see and discover where I really had set that ball rolling in motion big time. You know, I think I'm this nice person who is just like giving and supportive and helpful to everybody around. But the truth is I'm a suck up, you know, and that was a really tough pill to swallow. And I didn't see that until I did an inventory and a fifth step. and it's a pattern. Like I'm talking 4 or 5 different jobs where, you know, I would just I would bend over backwards for my supervisors and then wonder why they took advantage of me and just felt like I was, again, that doormat. And, you know, every time they would send me a text message, I would answer 20 seconds later, and just, I was always there and always available and wondering why, you know, I felt like I was being used, and my motives were selfish. You know, it was not to be of service to my place of employment. It was not to make work easier for others. It was because I need approval. And you know, that when I hear the twist of character, I always think of that example. And just to, if you're new, just to give you some hope, it you can change, because I have, you know, just today I had to ask my kind of newer supervisor for a day off, and you know, just the way I handled that situation, I didn't come in and sugarcoat and like show my belly or anything. I just said to her, "Hey, may I have this day off?" And she's like, "Yeah, sure." And you know, just how I conduct myself moving forward. You know, from that very first day, I met with my sponsor for coffee, and she told me, "You can walk in a different direction." That's that has happened for me, and I'm not perfect. I still catch myself doing that, and you know, being that stage character, stone cold sober, and being what people want and need me to be when I want something. And I catch myself sometimes. I have to pray. Sometimes I don't do anything. Completely honest with you, I just do it because I get ease and comfort from that too. But I have a choice today. And when I do the next right thing, I'm not saying I need to be a butthole to people, just cause I don't want to be a people pleaser. But when I go into interactions kind of prayerfully and with my motives in the right place, these promises come true. And I love, being on the broad highway, walking hand in hand with the spirit of the universe. Cause that's, sorry. that's what I didn't know I needed when I got to AA, but it's better than any drink I've ever had. And, you know, when people say I have a life beyond my wildest dreams, look, life happens and it's not perfect, but, walking hand in hand with the spirit of the universe, yeah, life is just magical when we do what, were taught in this book. And another thing real quick, this is going to set me up for doing 10th step inventory for years to come. If I can't be totally honest with another alcoholic right now, I don't stand much of a chance when, you know, I've engaged the same character defect for the fifth time in a week, you know, 5 years down the road. Like, my pride's not going to let me do that. Truth is, I need to be able to do that. I need to be able to work that 10th and 11th step and share it with other alcoholic, you know, and my higher power. And it really is practice. It's kind of the first shot at that. So, yeah, well, I have. Thanks.
Again, in this part of this reading, it's where that big book, you know, where I had two sponsors who we read every sentence, and in this reading, it's a little kick in the behind. It says, this is a life or death errand. You know, do I want to live? You know, can I humble myself and be honest enough with another human being to tell him or her, whoever, what I did? Do I want to live or do I want to die? It's pretty, you know, there it is. You know, it's not, I don't like to say it like that, but there, you know, every now and then in this big book, they remind you how serious this is. Now, I think this part of the book also explains in a way, you know, before I said, why do I have to tell this to another human being? I told it to myself. I told it to God. That's enough, right? That's plenty. But all the way up to now, I could all the way up to step five still be isolated as I want to be in AA. I haven't had to tell anybody anything. I haven't had to do anything. I could sit there, share if I wanted to. You know, say nothing, give you little bits and pieces, listen to your little bits and pieces. but I'm still all alone. I'm by myself because I haven't let you know the deepest, darkest, anybody, nobody knows that yet. And I've got to get that out there to just clean it up. I've got to tell somebody. And I've still been isolated. I'm already on step 5 and I'm still alone. And I'm not going to say this next part that I got by myself. I was reading the 12 and 12 and I was like, you have to have faith to do this. Faith in your higher power and faith in another person. You have to trust this other person. You do. Like, they're not going to talk out of school about you. And they're not. I mean, but it's not a blind faith either. When we go into this, it even said in the 12 and 12, people of faith have courage, but they also talk to other people about their faith. They don't just jump in, say something, pray, and then go, all right, I'm going to try it. They run it by somebody else. That's what we're doing. I'm running by, and it's a little bit more than running it by him, but I'm telling this other person all those things I did. And while I'm doing that, while I'm believing in him and having faith in him, that other man or other woman, I'm also getting a faith with my higher power. This is where it's all coming together. This is where I'm learning that I have the humility to tell somebody else, but I also have the honesty to believe in him and to believe in a higher power and to believe in this whole process of AA. Now I'm getting it. Now I know that I hopefully am going to live because I've learned a new way of life, and I've joined the human part with the higher power part. And by no means am I going to be great at this, but now I know that Mike doesn't have to do this alone. I think that's the key. I'm done being alone. When sometimes we see a newcomer, you never have to feel like this again, and you don't, because we're always here. But when you finish this fifth step and you've joined that higher power and you've joined the human and removed your isolation, you never, ever, ever have to feel like this again. And now, like BJ said, we go give it to other people, and we've got some more steps to get to, we'll get to that later, but soon we're going to have the confidence and the honesty and the belief to hear somebody's fifth step and know that it's a life and death errand, and know that somebody had the faith in us to tell us, and show that other person how we use our higher power in our life, because it's your higher power, but we're going to show you what we do. I mean, that's just how this works. One alcoholic shows another alcoholic, and then we go on. So thanks.
Okay, we have our last reading from page 75. It says, returning home, we find a place where we can be quiet for an hour. Carefully reviewing what we have done, we thank God from the bottom of our heart that we know him better. Taking this book down from our shelf, we turn to the page which contains the 12 steps. Carefully reading the first 5 proposals, we ask if we have omitted anything. For we are building an arch through which we shall walk a free man at last. Is our work solid so far? Are the stones properly in place? Have we skimped on the cement put into the foundation? Have we tried to make mortar without sand?
Yeah, this will be quick. I did it exactly like it says in the book at the direction of my sponsor. I went home after we were done going through my inventory. I read through the first 5 steps in the big book and sat for an hour trying to think, did I leave anything out? And it was very meditative. I know a lot of people don't really care for this and time seems to like crawl by. For me, it went fast. And I think that was kind of maybe my first experience in the fourth dimension where I was just really present, which that was one of the first times I think in my life I was actually present. So yeah, it was kind of a cool experience, but yeah, that's all I have for that.
This 6 and 7 hardly takes up 3 paragraphs in the book, and it's amazing how much there is here. And the first one, it says, returning home, we find a place where we can be quiet for an hour. Anybody who's like played sports and comes home after your game, win or lose, you're wired up, for a couple of hours. Anybody who's had a great first date or a bad first date. You come home and you're wired up. How'd that go? Did I do well? Did I do this? It's the same when, you know, you could come home from this wired up and jump in and go, let's go start making amends. Let's go start doing this. Let's go start doing that. But you need to be sure, you know, put the book away, sit there for an hour. You know, your sponsor's probably giving you these instructions before you went to do the fifth step. You know, it's coming. BJ said it's an hour. It's a long time. But if you're in the spirit, because you probably will be, that hour is going to fly, you know, and you take that book down and you read the steps and you think about if you skimped. And if you skimped, it's okay. Call them back or wait for another day and say, look, I got a little something else. And you'll know. I mean, you'll write away. And there's nothing wrong if you did or didn't. You'll find that out, but you gotta, this is where we've got to take now. We've learned to trust and believe and take our time. Let the higher power work. Let him, you know, relax. Make sure that you're ready, because you've got some steps coming up where you're going to have to be ready. You know, they might not go your way. When you get to step 8 and 9, you're walking into some other stuff, you know, but you've got your higher power now behind you. You've got other people behind you. You understand not just definition of words, but you know how to be honest. You know how to be fearless. You know how to do those things now. And you're not going to do them perfect no matter what you say, no matter what you do. But I say this all the time to newcomers, and they just take your time. I wanted it so bad just to be over. And by over, I just mean make me stop drinking and make me good, make me better. Doesn't work like that. It takes a long time. And when I put that book up on that shelf and I sat there and I, you know, I'm sitting on my hands and I'm bouncing. But after a minute, it was like, wow, like BJ said, you're in this fourth dimension. You're on the beam now. You're like, wow, this has happened. What people have said, excuse me, will happen has happened. I have a creator. I have a higher power that I really believe in now. And I'm gonna go show this and show other people how this has saved me. Thanks.
Okay, so we're now on page 76. If we can answer to our satisfaction, we then look at step 6. We have emphasized willingness as being indispensable. Are we now ready to let God remove from us all the things which we have admitted are objectionable? Can we now take them all, everyone? If we still cling to something, we will not let go. We ask God to help us be willing.
Step 6. So I don't think it's any secret that most alcoholics are enthusiasts. I don't do anything in moderation. You know, I'm either not going to the gym or going 8 times a week. You know what I mean? I'm either working 10 hours a week or 80. Like, it's so hard for me to balance. And my sponsor, we worked out of the big book almost exclusively. However, first 6 and 7, she directed me to the 12 and 12 when we read those steps in the 12 and 12. And in step 6 in the 12 and 12, it goes into the deadly sins and talks about how, you know, we can use anything like we used alcohol. And for me, you know, the problem comes when I have my claws in something to the point that it is taking up the majority of my consciousness. And, you know, just like when I'm drunk or if I'm like always using alcohol, I'm starting to block myself off from the sunlight of the spirit, and I start to get sick, and that untreated alcoholism creeps in, and I start to get the bedevilments, red flag. Like I need to practice step 6. And for me, becoming willing for God to remove something for me requires my participation. No human could ever knock a drink out of my hand, and God would not knock a drink out of my hand without my cooperation. Like I totally have to meet him halfway sometimes. And I like examples, so I'll use the most current example in my life. And real quick, it's hard to talk about 6 and 7 without talking about outside issues. So I'm sorry if I offend you, but here we go. So I struggle with poor body image. I think a lot of us do. But, you know, when it gets so ridiculous that I'm like comparing myself to every single woman I see to the point that I can't even hear a conversation that's going on. And, you know, like that kind of thing. It gets bad. And I love in the big book, for pretty much any problem we can encounter in recovery, the answer is at least in part to turn our thought to somebody we can help. Well, I can be sponsoring people. I can have a service position, volunteering at a local soup kitchen, and, you know, X, Y, and Z. But if I'm binge watching America's Next Top Model every day, I can't really expect to have sanity with respect to body image. You know, of course I'm going to feel like crap. If I'm weighing myself 20 times a day, that is not me being willing for God to relieve me of my body image issues. So for me, step 6 is where I try to my best ability to not engage in whatever character defect long enough for God to work his magic. That being said, I didn't realize until recently that step 6 has 2. So I heard, this isn't really my story to tell, so I'll try to keep it general, but I heard somebody share about they were struggling with a gambling addiction in recovery. And despite the fact that they were, you know, they'd have several years of sobriety and sponsees and the whole 9 yards, they were just like, it was about to drive them to drink. And, you know, they traded stocks and just had like $1 million in margin. And it was just consuming them. It was the first thing they thought of when they woke up and the last thing they thought of at night. And finally, they just got so uncomfortable that they started to say this little prayer that Jessica just read. It says, if we still cling to something we will not let go, we ask God to help us be willing. And the way the person shared, they said they started every single morning asking God to help them to be willing to have their gambling addiction removed. And they said after doing that every single day for exactly 6 months, they woke up one morning and the compulsion to gamble was completely gone. They sold all of their stocks. They didn't even look to see where they were. And they haven't picked up gambling since. So, it took me like 5 years to notice that that was there, that prayer was there. So I have been saying that prayer, for certain things that I use, like alcohol, instance body image, you know, God, help me be willing to let go of my eating disorder / body image issues. And, you know, so for me, turns out it's kind of a 2-step thing where I do my part, but I also ask for help. So that's it for now. Thank you.
You know, step 6 says we became willing to ask God to help us remove our defects of character. You know, willing is in this book all the time. It doesn't say anywhere that it has to be perfect. Just willing, give it a try. You know, I made a list, you know, in a column where I said all of my character defects. Then I told another person all of my character defects. Some of those character defects are fun. You know, being angry sometimes is fun. Being jealous is fun. You know, it got me what I wanted. But it doesn't say that this is going to be easy and God's going to remove everything and everything's going to be great. But it kind of means that I'm not going to hold on to those myself. You know, I'm not going to go to, because these men's are coming and there's this guy I don't like and I want to get mad at him. I can't do that anymore. I have to be willing to let that anger go, even though that anger would serve me. You know, that would be great to get mad. It's your fault, dude, not my fault. That's not what's going to happen. That's not what this is about. You know, we have to be willing to just ask our higher power, again, look, I need some help. I couldn't manage my life like that with all those things in it. I need you to help me. I'm willing to try. I really am. I will try as hard as I can. And most of those things will, you know, they'll be removed. And the ones that won't, we're going to work on those. It doesn't say God will perfectly take away all of your shortcomings and you're going to be a great person. You know, it doesn't work like that. You're a person, no matter what. You know, that took me a minute too in AA. I wanted to be perfect. You know, when I was drunk, I wanted to be perfect. And when I was in here, I wanted to be perfect. I wanted to be the perfect sponsor. I wanted to help everybody the right way. I wanted to feel better the perfect way. You know, I never wanted to be angry at my wife again. I never wanted for my kids to piss me off. It doesn't work like that. I mean, I'm a human being. I just have to be willing, when I do mess up, settle down, go back, talk to my higher power, say, look, I think I messed up, and then go to that person again and, you know, and say, hey, messed up. Can I get this right with you? So thanks.
Okay, our last reading of the night, again from page 76. When ready, we say something like this. My Creator, I am now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. Amen. We have then completed step 7. And BJ, I'm going to hand it to you. BJ and Mike, we're running short on time, so brief comments on this one to kind of wrap it up for the evening.
Yeah, I'll keep this short. I say this prayer every morning along with third step prayer, and let God decide what he wants to remove that day. Sometimes it's, you know, pride. Sometimes it's gossip. I've had the experience where my character defects have been used. There have been a couple times I've called my sponsor with some 10-step inventory and said, you know, I think I mouthed off to a supervisor today, and we talked. I don't know if I need to, if I owe amends, and we talked through it, and turns out she's like, I think you were just standing up for yourself this time. So yeah, for me, this is a step where God does for me what I can't do for myself. And it happens. I mean, it happened with drinking, and it's happened with a few other things in sobriety. Don't really have time to go into, but yeah, it works. Thanks.
You know, it says, humbly ask him to remove our shortcomings. You know, to be humbled, we need to have been humiliated. And that happened a lot. I'm ready. You know, I've been humiliated. I'm done with that. And what I think 5, 6, and 7 have done now is, like I said earlier, they've connected AA and the human power and the higher power, because I'm going on this journey now to step 8 and 9, where I'm going to have to be humble and I'm going to have to be honest and I'm going to have to be willing. And now I'm ready. I'm not isolated anymore. I have a spiritual life now that I can depend on. I have people in AA that I can depend on. And, you know, 8 and 9 might not go my way every time, and that's okay. Again, we're human beings. But I'm ready. I'm willing. I'm willing to go to say these prayers, to meet these people face-to-face, and get on with the next part of this AA life. Thanks.
Awesome. Thank you both so much for your shares tonight. That does bring us to the end of the big book study portion. Let's see. We have a couple things to wrap up. We do have a seventh tradition, which states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, the district area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, which is to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Simple Actions is not currently taking contributions, but you'll see in the chat pod again, links to contribute at varying levels of AA service. Okay, those should have come across. The Simple Actions group is a home group. Home group members, go ahead and raise your hand or wave. If you are interested in joining our home group or are in need of a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting to connect with any of the folks that are raising their hands. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, someone will be available in this Zoom room when we close the meeting. So please stick around to talk with us, or feel free to email info@simpleactions.net with questions. Do we have any announcements? You can use the raise hand function. All right. David, do you have information about our speaker this coming weekend?
Funny you should mention. Alcoholic David, great job, Mike and BJ. That was awesome. yeah, I just posted a link to the to the MP3 for Chris R's talk last night in the chat. If anybody wants to listen to that again. We have got next Sunday, Sharon C. from Los Angeles, California, on the Ask It Basket. And then the week after that, we've got Polly Pistol. I think she's from Florida now. And I'm trying to get Jerry Weaver the week after that. But come back next week for Sharon C. from Los Angeles, California. And bring a newcomer, for goodness sake. Thank you.
Thanks, David. All right, so we are going to make it so that you all can unmute yourselves to join in the Lord's Prayer, and then after that to thank BJ and Mike. All right, so the Our Father. Our Father,
who
art in heaven,
hallowed be thy name.
Thy kingdom come,
thy will be done.
On earth
as it is in heaven.
Give us this day our daily bread,
and forgive us our trespasses
as we forgive those who trespass against us.
Lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil.
For thine is the kingdom,
the power, and the glory
forever
and ever.
Amen.